Hey guys.
Hey.
Hey, Gary and Cole.
Oh, Bob's here. Hey, Bob.
It's Retronauts Bob Mackey, everybody.
Yep.
I was just out at the malt shop, and I picked up this Mad magazine.
Did you get my copy of an Archie comic, too?
Huh? I got an Archie comic for you and a Cracked for Bob.
Thank you. I prefer the off-brand of Mad magazine.
It's nothing but listicles now. It's weird.
And I know both of you guys love irreverent humor, so I thought that I would get this and check it out. And the coolest part is the fold-in, obviously, in the back. Here's a Norm Breyfogle drawing here. It's Spider finally wins the ESPYs. I don't know who Spider is.
It's a weird spelling too.
It's like a bad guy in a RoboCop. Or like,
all those fold-ins are basically created by a 90-year-old man, so he could be losing it at this point.
Yeah, it could just.
God bless you, Al Jaffe. You're a treasure.
Oh yeah, Al Jaffe is the guy who does that, not Norm Breyfogle. It's weird that I pulled Norm Breyfogle, which is another like weird old artist from those things. But anyway, let's ruin our magazine.
You won't be able to return it now.
Creak.
Fold.
Does the page have a hinge, Gary?
Yep.
Okay.
This is the.
I like that they come pre-hinged now.
Yeah, so you can resell them. Okay, it is Spy versus Spy.
Fuck.
Yeah, fuck.
Oh, god damn it.
Yeah.
Why are you saying that? You made us do this.
You did this.
Oh, right.
I'm Gary Butterfield.
My name's Cole Ross.
I am a slightly sick Bob Mackey.
Yeah, you can tell by the timbre of his voice.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to having this illness immortalized forever. I can revisit it at any point in my life now.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to people accusing us of getting a Bob Mackey impersonator. So it's just we couldn't get the
podcast Classic Knot Gamers.
Yeah, classic Knot.
We're the Classic Knots. I'm Jeremy Church and I'm Ray Shedholt. All together with
Shedholt.
Bob Macklemore. So
I like the idea of every time I get laryngitis, just recording a little bit more of the audiobook version of my autobiography that I just write. So that way it's preserved with the most gravitas.
But since you're writing as you go along, every entry would be like, I woke up with a sore throat today.
Yeah.
Like laryngitis continues. Like it would just seem like you lived, you know, I don't know how long you're gonna live. 40, 45 years, 45 years of
sounds about right.
Of sore throat pain. Yep. The entire time.
Yeah. The laryngitis kid.
Laryngitis Chronicles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why
Spy versus Spy, guys?
Why'd you do this to us? Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, Spy versus Spy was my first like independent video game purchase as a child, probably 8 years old. And I stood in Toys R Us just looking at the wall of games, and I was there with my mom. And my mom was a big fan of Mad Magazine, and she actually got me into Mad Magazine as a very small and impressionable kid. So, I mean, when you're a little boy, you sometimes look up to your parents. You're like, they're smart. They have prevented me from dying up to this point, so clearly they're doing something right. And so I brought home Spy versus Spy, and I was just kind of like, maybe I just don't understand this. I thought games were supposed to be fun in some way, yeah. But it really wasn't fun.
I cannot imagine playing this as an 8 year old. Like that sounds like a nightmare.
Did you get this on the NES or the Game Boy? Because I played the Game Boy version when I was a little kid.
It's NES. Interesting you bring that up, Cole, because this game has been ported to every goddamn thing, and apparently it's a classic in the UK at least, because it originally came out in 1984, yep. Which explains why it's so primitive, compared to other NES games in 1988.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it's one of those Euro darlings that it came out on a computer system that I can't pronounce it.
Yeah. Yeah, like that series of 8-bit computers that was all over. And luckily it's not like an isometric platformer. that's like impossible to control, where you collect assets all day, which is like how most of those games are. Mm-hmm. This one's
so many of those.
Yeah, it is just nonstop. It is a where our next set of recording, we've got a game that's just like so Euro to be as to be meaningless. So this is like super neat idea, but like, boy, is it counterintuitive. And then once you get it, it's really not fun to play against the computer in this game.
No, it's not.
Not remotely.
We should probably explain what the premise of the game is, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a black spy and a white spy, as occurred in the comics, right? And mm-hmm. I believe the short animated shorts that ran in, as interstitials on Mad TV. You are running around kind of a grid of rooms, and you are looking for certain items and also trying to kill the other spy so that you can get out. These are items like, you know, files, keys, etc. And you leave traps and also kind of carry around counters to those traps in order to kind of like thwart whatever somebody leaves behind. And also, if you're in the same room with somebody, you can have a comically kind of frenetic knife fight with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a club fight.
It's very brutal when you do the one-on-one combat. You're just like knifing and clubbing each other in close combat until one of you dies.
It's like a scene from Oz.
Just stabbing until that person dies. You don't have to kill the other person. It's just to disable them temporarily so you can go about your spy machinations.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Like you just this time penalty and being able to move around unmolested. It's kind of a cool idea.
The main problem is it is a very hard, I mean, it's a very simple game because it comes from 1984, but it's very hard to look at and listen to because the rooms are all like these garishly colored, sparsely decorated, all basically identical layouts to them. And the music is maybe a 10-second loop of music, and that is the only music level in the entire game.
Yeah, that iconic Spy versus Spy theme that we all love so much.
And the music is bad enough, but the sound effects often overwrite the music, so it just turns into like just a cacophony of sounds that has no like purpose or order to it. It's very, very grating.
Yeah, it is a aesthetically unpleasant and assaulting experience to play this game. And like the difficulty curve's real weird too. Like I played the training mission and played the first couple levels and was okay, and then immediately couldn't progress after that. Like, I just couldn't, like, the other spy was just too good for me, especially once you start getting to more than, like, you know, once you get to more complex building layouts. Mm-hmm. Not complex, just bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger grids and everything.
Yeah. And I believe, I mean, the point of the game is to get the attaché case and then three pieces or four pieces of evidence or intelligence or whatever. But when you have the case, you can't attack or place traps, I think. So you have to actually stash the case while you're collecting things, if you want to do anything within the game. It has some cool ideas to it, but it is very primitive. It is very rooted in that era of game design that it came from.
Yeah, and it's also like it would be fun playing this two-player, except for that you can see the other player's screen.
Yeah.
Like entirely, like if that was a problem in GoldenEye, it's a way bigger problem in a game that's literally about hiding things from the other person.
And so that becomes like a part of the calculus of the game is paying attention to not only where they're at, but what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that on the Game Boy version, I have a very vague recollection of playing this, like when I was on vacation, like with my cousins and stuff. Each person had their own screen.
Like with a link cable?
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, how would you do it on a single Game Boy?
I don't know, just like the scene from Ghost, like your cousin just reaches around behind you and whispers in your ear while playing
why is the soundtrack of the Spy versus Spy game just the Righteous Brothers?
Like
just a mini version.
One person controls the A, B, and start key. The other person controls the D-pad and the select key.
Yep. It's like, have you seen that video from one of the recent procedural cop shows where the database is being hacked and to counter hack, they have two people typing on a single keyboard?
No.
Wow.
Yeah. It's less funny if you haven't seen it. Now I'm just guy who describes funny internet video. So I will take my leave.
But, so you played this with a link cable. Was it fun, two players with everyone having their own screen?
I was really young. Like I was baffled. I had no idea what it was, but it was a video game and it was in front of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I had a vague notion that like I was supposed to find Mad Magazine funny. mm-hmm. and things that were associated with it because of The Simpsons, honestly.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna admit to something that's probably makes me a little bit of a Philistine here. I don't find Mad Magazine funny.
If I just picked up a Mad Magazine now, there would be things that I would appreciate, but it probably wouldn't be like laugh out loud funny. Mm-hmm. I did have like, I think it was just an age thing.
Yeah.
Like when I was, you know, in like eighth and ninth grade, I was pretty into it.
Yeah.
And then I was joking about Cracked earlier. I did buy Cracked magazine, and because I needed to set myself up in opposition to my peers because console wars and stupidity, like I was like, this is better to my friend Austin, who is a big Mad Magazine fan, and history is not proving me right. Yeah.
I kind of preferred Cracked too, Gary, actually. I felt like they were edgier because they were kind of off the radar a little more.
I had that sense, like this was just kind of the underdog. And then there was one artist who I really liked for it, but at the time, like I liked it for all the wrong reasons. Like he just did really realistic looking renders of people. Like there wasn't anything caricaturesque or funny about the drawings themselves. I just liked it because it reminded me of comic book art, I think. Mm. You know, like these are realistic looking, cool looking dudes, as opposed to like these you know, Land of Confusion Genesis video monsters would come out oftentimes in Mad. So those are the two things I liked about it more. But looking back on it, like even though it's kind of weird because now like Cracked is a brand because of that website that's, you know, fairly well thought of.
It has nothing to do with what Cracked ever was.
No, it's so weird. When that website launched, I remember them being like, hey, remember Cracked magazine? We're relaunching, but we're doing it a little bit different. And it was just like, why is this even associated whatsoever? But that's got some kind of clout. Like there is, you know, respectable things that come out of that every once in a while.
Yeah,
it's all listicles, but you know, there's good writing that shows up there.
Yeah, like I will follow a Cracked link.
A funny story about that, about the like the current version of Cracked is that I don't you can judge if it's funny for yourself, but I grew up with Mad Magazine, and it helped like shape my idea of what like satire and parody was, which is why I do that for Something Awful today. And I wrote one article for Cracked years ago, almost a decade ago, and they liked it. And I was pitching them other stuff, and they're like, "Oh, we don't do parody." And I'm like, "What? You're Cracked. That's what you are. You have to do parody." And they're like, "No, we don't do parody." And I was like, "That kind of just blew my mind. Like, oh, okay. I'm confused."
Yeah, it is whatever the name is for that gross dollar amount that it is worth for people just to have heard of something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the reason why they're remaking movies that were unpopular. It's just because it's worth so many million dollars in advertising budget just for someone to have a ding of recognition.
Do you really want to know what that term is?
Sure.
Brand equity.
Brand equity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Gross.
Speaking of brand equity, it seems like, Cracked was like the also ran of the magazine parody genre, whatever the hell that was. Mm-hmm. Now they're on top and Mad Magazine is struggling. And I subscribe to their Twitter account because they tweet out funny things occasionally. But it's weird, like things I tweet get more retweets than Mad Magazine most of the time.
Wow.
And I feel really bad. And it's like, oh, look, Mad Magazine named Weird Al their first guest editor. I was like, they kind of had to. They need to be relevant. Like, yeah. I'm surprised they're still around. I'm surprised DC keeps them around. I don't want them to die, but no one cares about Mad Magazine. And I feel like my generation was the last because baby boomers grew up with it and told us it was important, so we read it. But now kids today don't care because there's so much more edgier humor on the internet today mm-hmm. without needing to pay $3 for a magazine to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up with miniskirts.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder if there's anything they could do. I'm kind of surprised they haven't essentially tried to ape Cracked and do like a website that is a more of a like more viable humor platform. You know, like it's good on them for their integrity, but like I'm kind of surprised that they haven't done that.
Yeah. I mean, really, they're really more interested in preserving their archives because they are a great the history of Mad Magazine is basically the history of comic censorship, where EC Comics could no longer exist in its current form because it was too risky So it became a magazine, a humor magazine, where they could do risque stuff in a different format. And I think it's worth going back to the history. Like, you can buy all of Mad Magazine on like a DVD for like 10 bucks. And you can go back and read like 50 years worth of parody. All the Walter Mondale jokes you'd ever want to read are there for you. Waiting.
Yes, I mean,
Walter Mondale.
It is really interesting to see like a humorist and a satirist portrayal of these events that I was not alive to see, like in cartoon form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably in a more satisfying way than even just like the straight-laced political cartoons of the time would be, like, almost assuredly.
Yeah. You know,
but that seems to be something that is like better bandied about in history books, I think, people are going to be acquainted with.
There was going to be any controversy at all, but
No, it's not.
I'm of the opinion that old political cartoons are more or less like one of the worst things. Uh-huh. I find those impossible to look at and not get annoyed at, and just like they always seem weirdly like arbitrary. Like there was an Onion joke about it where it was like the office trying to figure out what political cartoon means, but it's like, you know, guy pouring a jar marked oil into a hat with a dollar sign on it. You know, wearing a vest that has the American flag. It's just like old political cartoons are intolerable.
The only reason that I bring them up is just because I saw a bunch of them in our history book in high school and middle school and stuff. For some reason, that was kind of like and here is the like man on the ground humorist take on this kind of thing. And it's like, I got nothing here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of them are terrible, but I like the ones that are good don't get enough attention because most political cartoonists are extremely lazy. They will draw something like an oil spill or a gorilla or a fire, and they will write debt on it or like Obama's arrogance and then call it a day. Like that's all they do.
You get your Ramirez's and such. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the absolute worst, and he's won Pulitzers. Like, every comic he makes is the most lazy and somehow most offensive thing I've ever seen in my life.
He's up to like 3 now or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't mean to say that there weren't exceptions. Like, obviously there are ones that are good. I think that just because it, as a form, like it just doesn't present well. It doesn't sample well.
Right.
If you were to take like just a random sampling of 5 political cartoons, like I don't think you're likely to get a lot of greatness in that.
Mm-hmm.
And to go regular searching.
I think
for
it invites.
Stuff.
It invites laziness because people don't want nuance in their political opinions. They want binary, like, extremes, or else they don't know what to do, you know.
Well, also, you have to express it in an image. Like, you know, like trying to express a nuanced idea in a single frame comic is difficult.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's why the ones that are good that can do that really stand out, because, like, it is a triumph because it is good on its own, but it also is because it's using visuals, like, really effectively and efficiently, which is difficult.
Yeah, like Clay Bennett is out of, I think, like Knoxville is really good at that.
Think of his name, actually. Cool. Thank you for bringing him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only know all this because of the political cartoons thread on Something Awful. Like, I follow that pretty regularly.
I used to follow it, but then it got too depressing. So yep.
I dip in and out.
I was like, wow, that is a racist cartoon. Oh, there's another racist cartoon. Like, I've had enough of these.
I will occasionally skip thousands of pages of that thread just because I have to put it down for a little while.
That's been like a real thing this year where, like, for the most part, Something Awful is this, you know, bastion of goodness in a lot of ways, and then every once in a while some forum will be like, oh, this is just a bunch of assholes being assholes. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, it's dumb. I'm still surprised by it, even though I shouldn't be, and it's because I really stick to, like, you know, browsing a bunch of topics and the Something Awful podcast thread, and that's pretty much all I do on there. And I definitely never really post on anything else, so I'm not exposed to it, but every once in a while I'll just pop in on something like, oh, this is still the internet and this is still full of like regressive dickheads.
Well, that thread is not depressing because of the people in it. I think everybody there is on the kind of the same page. Like, like we probably shouldn't draw, you know, Islamic people this way, or, you know, like people from Islamic countries. But the actual subject matter is depressing that people are being paid to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're bringing it up as examples. So you're not depressed by Something Awful. You're depressed by the fact that people are right. Yeah. That makes sense.
The state of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I was unsure because Viv is constantly complaining and like showing posts of just like people just being the worst on that forum, and not in like the areas that are designated for people being the worst. Like that forum has like, if you want to be the worst, go here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has like specific playpens for shitty people, and then they just, you know, escape. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Oh well. Yeah. So like, I will kind of go back and amend my statement. I don't understand why Mad Magazine, like, and during my years when I would have like found Mad Magazine like entertaining, it never hooked for me, but I totally recognize how like noteworthy it is and like how influential. I got that kind of satire from other sources, I guess.
What sources were those?
Yeah, Simpsons.
You brought up the political. Oh yeah. Simpsons.
What was that? I'm sorry about.
You brought up the political cartoons thread, Cole, and an interesting connection is so at some point, maybe a year or so ago, they were posting a lot of political cartoons by Antonio Prohias, I think his name was. He, the Spy versus Spy artist.
Yeah.
And he left Cuba because they were nationalizing the press and he could no longer make cartoons making fun of Castro.
Mm-hmm.
So he fled Cuba, came to America, and wrote a comic making fun of the Cold War for like 30 years until he died.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty good revenge on his part.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, and this whole spy thing is definitely a Cold War. Like, it is a product of its time, even though, like, the actual source material, as far as I understand, didn't have any real political weight behind it. It was just these two cone faced people killing each other in absurd ways.
Yeah, it's kind of weirdly like Spy versus Spy itself. And Bobby, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you might probably have a more recent dive on it. But like, it struck me as like itchy and scratchy esque. Like, almost like it didn't seem like there was
very much so. You're totally right about that. There's no dialogue and it's all about violence and the setup to violence.
Yeah. Like there wasn't a whole lot of kind of political commentary in it, even though it is like, you know, kind of making fun of this like two tribes kind of thing. But it's not, you know, it is just like hurting each other in creative ways. Every time I read it.
I think ultimately, not to get too English majory on this, but I think ultimately it was like about the futility of the Cold War, and like regardless of who won in a given issue, they were always fighting every time. There was no one gained any ground. There was no ultimate winner in this battle.
Yeah, like the point of it is because it lasted, you know, or the point of it came to light because it lasted 30 years. Like the fact that the comic just kept going and didn't change was actually the message. Yeah. There are sequels to this game that are really weird. I don't know if you've seen these. They didn't come out on systems that we had, but it's just them going to different places. Like the second one is just this game, but on an island, and the third one is just this game,
like,
but in the Arctic.
Spy goes Hawaiian or something.
they do go Hawaiian, and then they go to Antarctica for some reason,
because there's a lot to fight for there,
and a lot of fun gadgets and like cool things to hide things behind.
It's all pineapples. Weird. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's very, very weird.
It's hard to tell which pineapple does what. The graphics all look the same.
I have no idea what, like, how you would make a sequel to this game that wasn't just different assets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this game is, it's weird. It's got that simplicity of old Atari games where, like, it resists remaking or anything. Like, one of the things I was thinking when I was playing this game was, like, how you would make this with modern, if you were going to make a modern version of this.
Mm-hmm.
How you would do it. And I really honestly have no idea other than just like mandatory split screen, like playing it over the internet.
Yeah. It's like, the closest thing I can think of is a game on Steam called The Ship.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Like, you know, just where everybody kind of has their own role. Like that's, I think that is the modern version of this kind of asymmetric. Everybody has their own, objective. Can you know, kind of side of this?
Yeah. Well, and this isn't asymmetric.
I suppose it's perfectly symmetric.
There is a modern remake, by the way,
for iOS, right?
Yeah, the iOS version.
Yeah, I've never looked into it, but it looks identical outside of like they made the graphics a little better.
It would I can't imagine playing that. Like I just can't do it. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well.
The game facts board for this is nutso.
It's pretty weird.
So somehow they have figured out, or you know, just that like everybody agreed that all of the topics are going to be just numbered in order. So it starts out with, I expected this board to have at least one topic, and then it's two topics, three topics, four topics, none of which have any content.
It's making fun of this first guy who said that I expect this MF Savage, who was like, I expected this board to have at least one topic. And then, you know, four or five people decided to take him to task by just counting up. And in that gentle game facts-y way, you know, well over, you know, continuing it for years, mm-hmm. from 2009 to 2013.
Over the course of 4 years.
Yeah, people were just counting up on this board.
Just it's like checking so spiteful, in jeez.
It is really weird. There's a real good review. Like, I always feel a little bit bad making fun of people whose English is probably not their primary language, but there's a review that has a lot of funny sentences in it. And I didn't click on it because I thought it would have mistranslations. I clicked on it because the name of the review is, if you read Mad Magazine, you know what these two are up to, which, like, I like that as like a, you know what you're getting.
Those spies are at it again.
Yeah, you know, they're murdering each other in this game as well.
What are they going to get into this time?
The guy says, everybody has at least once in their life fingered through the pages of Mad Magazine at their local store. Who could resist such blatant parodies and lowbrow humor? But to me, the highlight of Mad Magazine has always been Spy versus Spy. So it should only be a mild shock to learn that these two starred in a game way back in yesteryear. Well, a lot of yesteryears.
Yes, in the lifetime of a lot of people who are currently alive.
A lot of yesteryears. Yes. But he is one of the very few people who gives it like a fair review, because this being like a lot of games you do for the show, it's all like ones or tens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot, and some tens that are ironic and some are not. But he's like, this is like a 6 out of 10. It's a cool idea,
mm-hmm.
you know, but...
Yeah. So I would be curious to see how this was played on an 8-bit PC, like two player like that. Right. Because there are some games that, you know, you just kind of split the keyboard or whatever. Like, I just the play experience of this feels like it almost feels like a little bit of like an arcade kind of thing, but it's way too slow paced for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assume it's one of those keyboard splitting games, but that never felt right. It felt like you're eating too close to somebody or something like that.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Like, it's like the Lady and the Tramp for your hands. Like, if you're not ready to Lady and the Tramp and kiss, you can play this on one keyboard and eventually be holding hands as you continue to have your machinations. I don't mean to cut you off, but one of the reviews for this by Psychopenion Penguin just has, you know, it's a normal review. And then he has a good points and bad points section. And his good points are, this review is not as long or as tedious as a King Broccoli review.
What is King Broccoli?
And he just says that. Four times. I assume it's another Game Facts guy. Like, I don't know for sure, but he says that four times. This review is not as long or as tedious as a King Broccoli review.
Is this a call out?
Yeah, it seems like it's a real diss. Shots fired.
Rap battles of Game Facts.
Yeah, like,
oh, that's actually a thing. Oh, I forgot about that.
Rap battles of Game Facts?
No, just as a category of fanfic, like doing rap battles between different characters with either within a series or across series. Like, how would Snape and Dumbledore fare against each other in a rap battle? And so it's people writing out rap themed around these characters and deciding who would win. It's crazy.
Huh, that's really weird. I had no idea. I knew about there's like the epic rap battles from history thing.
Yeah.
It's like historical figures, but not fictional figures.
This might be it might be something related to that. People trying to follow on the coattails. Like, oh, these creative people did something original. Let me see what happens when somebody from Homestuck does it.
Oh, ugh. Yeah. The end final line of this review is, hell, or should you buy? ? Hell no. If you value your life, you will not play this game.
Jeez, wow.
It's pretty dark.
Is he going to make good on that promise?
The Game Facts killer.
I will kill everyone who played this game. It's like The Ring. Like, me reading this review means that I'm next.
Wait, what, have you played it before you read the review, Gary?
I did actually play this when I was young. But it was just like somebody had it and I was like, oh, this is confusing. Let's play Trojan instead. And like, you know, put in a different game.
Wow. That's crazy. So this guy, I'm sorry to make this, you know, Abject Suffering reads Game Facts. His rundown at the end is like comparing different things. So it says the replay value, Heroes of the Lance challenge, Heroes of the Lance.
Yeah. Heroes of the Lance as a numerical rating.
Yeah.
For how bad something is. Well, that is a really, really tough game.
Yeah.
To understand or play. That's a bad one. You can't search. I was trying to see who King Broccoli was, but you can't search GameFAQs usernames on here. It just brings up games with the word King or Broccoli in the title, which there are some, surprisingly. But yeah, Spy versus Spy, guys. It's this is a bad. It's not a bad game. It is a cool idea for a game that is not, you can't really play today, and doesn't really work. Like, it's like a real, like, 5 or 6 out of 10 kind of deal, I think.
Yeah. Two hair raisers.
Yeah, and it came out at a time when NES games were just becoming so much more visually interesting and interesting by design and sounding a lot better. And this is just a throwback to, like, it could have been, like, a 1985 Famicom game or something, you know? It just feels so dated for 1988.
Yeah, well, the original version came out in 1984, and that's, you know, it's like a lot of the same. The old PC versions don't look that different than the NES version. So it is essentially the same kind of graphics.
Yeah, like it just has a different attitude toward, like, variety, I guess. Like, in terms of what it's going to put in front of you. Like, it's not that far off from the Asset Factory thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a bummer.
Yeah.
This game's a bummer, Bob. I know you're sick.
I'm sorry I bumped you out. Yeah. It was a part of my childhood. It was something I would turn to. Like, I guess I'm obligated to play this because it's one of, like, the three games I own right now. It was, like, one of the first, like I said, one of the first purchases I made. I had that, and I think, like, Clash of Demon Head I got at a garage sale, and Spy versus Spy, like, for, like, maybe a year.
Clash of Demon Head's pretty good. Like,
it's
like,
great. Yeah. Like, I'm glad I found that game so young. And people that really like it now, people are, I mean, only in recent years have people understood just how, like, crazy and fun and just out there that game is.
So Bob, was that the, when you were kind of held hostage by your game collection as a kid, was this the worst game that you had, that you owned?
Oh, like, man, I'm trying to think.
I'm going to ask you next for the
NES. I think for the NES, this was the worst game that I had. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, it was Time Lord.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm familiar with your Time Lord.
That's one of the 300 games Rare made for the NES.
Yep.
Yep. That's about collecting things that only appear when you jump to go to the next level.
Yeah.
Because that was Rare's thing.
Trying to find a way. And it was,
for some reason, I know it was published by Milton Bradley, which is just, I don't know why I know that, but I just know that MB was on the box.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I think I've talked about it before, and this isn't actually that bad of a game, but, like, Arkista's Ring, which I actually kind of like, but, like, it's not a good game in retrospect. And that was a game that I was held hostage by as a youth. I somehow bought, probably from, like, a video rental place that was selling games, because it looked like Zelda, but it don't play like Zelda.
So I don't know if I have an answer to this question for myself, but this brings up, like, kind of a specific feeling from my childhood, which is when I was sitting down to play this on Game Boy with my cousin, you know, and, like, on the beach in South Carolina or whatever, thinking, like, oh, I'm just a stupid kid. That's why I don't understand this. Not recognizing the difference between, you know, being a kid and not being able to understand things, or something just being inscrutable. Like, I didn't know that it was the game's fault. And so I can't pinpoint exactly where that tip happened, where I realized, oh, there can be something wrong with the product, as opposed to, like, taking it on to myself.
It's when Robin Williams hugged you and told you it wasn't your fault. that's when you figured it out. And you were like, shut the fuck up, Sean. And then and you're like, no, he's like, no, it's not your fault, Cole. And you're like, Sean, don't play with me. Just shut the fuck up. And then he's like, Cole, it's not your fault, buddy. Shut the fuck up, dude.
I am ashamed to say that is a very affecting scene for me still.
It comes out of fucking nowhere.
I know.
Dude. Like,
I know.
It is, I think I thought so too. And then when I go back and watch it on YouTube, the transition from zero to tears is so whiplash fast that I cannot handle it.
Yep.
Like, it feels like a poorly written and acted scene in retrospect.
The idea of that scene is more affecting to me than actually watching it. But
It would work. Like, it feels like it would work on the page, like in words. You know, where you could kind of pace it yourself rather than just having to have Matt Damon, like, instantly just, like, go from, like, man, I'm pretty tough. Oh, I'm not tough anymore. I ain't so tough no more.
I do remember that era of the Damon Affleck like power team. Like, where will they go next?
Nothing's going to stop these guys. Oh, wait, Dogma will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of, and then they were quiet for a little while, and then they both kind of came back and like are now, it's like one of them has infinite money because of board movies, and the other one, makes kind of weird Boston-y crime thrillers that like aren't without merit, you know? So,
actually, this is like such a tangent, but that's what we're doing right now. I remember like when I was a Kevin Smith fan, and I haven't been a Kevin Smith fan in over a decade, so please don't judge me. But I remember it was a real point of contention for Kevin Smith that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon did not thank him when they accepted the award for Good Will Hunting. And I find that to be just so entitled. I couldn't, but like, even when I like Kevin Smith, I'm like, you're Kevin Smith. You have nothing to do with this success.
Yeah.
Well, you let Ben Affleck star in Mallrats. Mm-hmm. He would have been in another bad movie if you didn't hire him.
I think that he produced it or helped produce it. I think he was involved in funding it somehow.
I guess technically it is an independent movie, you know?
Yeah. I the only reason why I know that is because I went through the same arc, probably to
I
a T.
See.
Like,
okay.
Yeah. Like, I also, like, I, you know, owned all this Kevin Smith movies on DVD.
Yep.
You know, and really liked them. And then, saw him being mad about that and looked into it. And then it was like, oh, you know, and I actually went later with that guy, like, as late as, like, I listened to the first, 50 episodes or so of his podcast before I got kind of sick of it. And like, it's not, again, like, that guy is so weird because he's not, I don't like him. Like, I don't like those movies anymore, but it's not like the dude can't make a joke. Like, he's funny on the episode of How Did This Get Made he's on. Like, he can be a funny dude. He's just kind of like not really worth my time anymore. But it's not like he's, he's not Larry the Cable Guy. Like, he's, he's not without any content at all.
Yeah.
I think the American white male goes through various stages.
Yeah.
And like you need to shed your Kevin Smith fandom before you can become an adult.
I've talked about this before, like how that was a defining moment for me when I realized, oh, I don't like these movies.
Yeah.
It was there's something about these, like, so the product is constant, right? These, like, these movies don't change, but there's something about me that is like, shifted between the age of 17 and 19 that was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I'm actually like progressing somehow. Like, I no longer find Chasing Amy to be a sensitive and tactful exploration of sexuality, right? Which, like, I remember thinking, like, yeah, this is something I haven't seen before, like a movie about homosexuality that just actually it is just like it's not tactful like I thought it was.
This movie won a fucking award. Mm-hmm. Like the GLBT Alliance,
the GLAD award. Kind of,
the GLAD award. It won an award.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy in retrospect. Yeah. But the I don't know. I also went through the same thing, and I still don't think, like, if, like, let's say I'm like stuck at an airport bar, and like Kevin Smith is there and he's like, hey, what's up? Like, it would probably be fun to sit down and talk to him. Mm-hmm. But that's the same kind of logic that got Bush elected. Like, it doesn't mean I want him to like make my movies. It just means like he seems like a nice dude.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like he'd be, and now I kind of like, again, like, I don't want to come off like I'm white knighting for Kevin Smith, but as somebody who the product is constant until all of a sudden now it's just bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, he just does the weirdest shit now that is like bad and misguided, but is very much his, like, it is, I don't know anything else that's like it.
Yeah.
It's like he's making really weird horror movies now.
Yeah. Like, about a podcaster who is turned into a walrus.
Yeah, which, like, get the subtext on that one. You know, this guy who was kicked off Southwest Airlines for being too fat for a seat. Like, he's doing a horror movie about a podcaster turning into a walrus. Like, it more or less writes itself here. Uh-huh. But, like, Red State is really weird, too, if you've ever seen that. That's the last movie by him that I've seen. And, like, it was a situation where it was, like, on a plane or something like that. Like, I might as well watch this. And it's not good, but it's super weird. I don't know.
I mean, isn't it just like an overtly politically charged Rob Zombie horror movie? Like, that's
no, like there's no gore or anything in it. It's like a siege movie. Hmm. It's like, it's like that. And then eventually there's kind of a siege, like a Waco situation. Mm-hmm. And then like a weird quasi supernatural element at the end.
Huh.
Like, it is, it's just kind of the thing where, like, I respect somebody who is like, like a, he's an auteur in that sense of the word without any of the qualitative aspects that comes with that. Mm-hmm. Like he is making his own, like they are a product of him.
Yeah.
You know, specifically. So, but
yeah. And I will say, like, as much as I don't like him anymore, if you go back to that era that he flourished in, there are so many worse writers and directors who are just getting by on ripping off Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like, oh, all characters can sound the same. They just have to reflect how smart the writer is and how irreverent yeah. and how they can reference pop culture. Yep. Like yeah. I went back to Pulp Fiction for the first time in a long time. And it's like, some of it was kind of like, eh, because at that point, it was novel for a character to reference things in the real world. So Tarantino was really focusing on that. But now it's like, now every movie does that. Now every movie understands that, like, we are all savvy pop culture consumers, and they're rewarding us for that.
Yeah. The best thing is, okay, so this will be my final word on Kevin Smith. The best thing about him is the story of making Clerks. And that's why Zach and Mira Make a Porno is actually a pretty good movie, I think.
It's I don't like actually like watching that movie, but I think that it's got a nice, like, there's a niceness to it.
Yeah.
The thing I'm picking up a little bit on the same thing that you're picking up on with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't begrudge him.
No,
you know, I don't necessarily begrudge him his success. Like, it is a weird, like, I'm not one of those, like, the free market determines all guys, but, like, you know, people dig it. Like, you know, people like it.
And again, the motto, we wouldn't take it away from you.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't take it away from anybody if they're into it. It's just not for me anymore.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But if I see you at a video store and you're holding Mallrats, I will slap it out of your hand.
Man, I never understood the heat that Mallrats got. Like, why people enjoyed that movie.
It is. I don't know.
Even when I was at my Kevin Smithiest Kevin Smith phase, I thought that was a dud.
Everyone thought that.
Okay.
Like, it was a huge flop. Like, not everybody, like, his fans, like, he just disliked it, but, like, there was a huge flop.
Mm.
Yeah. We should start a separate side podcast where it's just us remembering stuff about Kevin Smith. And, like, over the course of a season, you would get a complete picture as to what maybe has happened to him or his history.
Yeah. Okay, like, so no primary research.
No, yeah, exactly. Just between all of us, what we remember right now, let's do his biography. Like, birth to, you know, 2030 or whatever.
An oral history of a man as written by complete strangers.
Yeah, exactly. People who don't really, who only know him from his work. So I think he was born in New Jersey. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Anywho, what have we learned here today? A lot about the history of Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
A lot about Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
A lot about game facts.
That apparently everybody's walking around with car batteries attached to them, and if water falls on them from above a door, they will get electrocuted.
I thought maybe that meant that they were robots. Like, since they're going to constantly stab each other, like, maybe NES need to make them robots, but then they have ghosts. So they couldn't be robots unless...
Well, what if there's,
like,
a ghost in the machine?
Yeah, exactly. Unless we're a real fucking Deus Ex Machina kind of thing going on here.
I think we learned about the lighter side of bad games. Am I right, everybody? that's a deep cut for all you Dave Berg fans out there.
Yeah. Hippies don't care whose feet they step on.
I think this Agnew guy works there.
Yeah. That must have been, The Simpsons must have been a little weird. So there's so many Mad Magazine references. Like, we've talked about that before, where, like, there's the thing, the culture that you just pick up from The Simpsons without actually knowing the primary material, like, or from other, like, Tiny Toons and stuff. Like, that's how I learned about, like, Citizen Kane was through Tiny Toons. Like, but I had Mad Magazine from before The Simpsons or contemporaneously. Like, it must have been weird to just, like, see all those jokes in that show and not really understand the context at all.
I mean, it's just like anything else. I'm grateful to Animaniacs and The Simpsons and any of those kind of things that served as an inroad to kind of, like, more established culture. Like, that is like one of the biggest, one of the best positive effects that any piece of media has had on me in my life, is, like, encouraging me to seek out that stuff to enrich and understand the reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think cartoons now are much different in that kids today are not forced to absorb culture from decades before they were born, because they can just seek out their own entertainment. So cartoons today cannot reference, like, Hello Dolly or Citizen Kane or, you know, an old radio show. Even if, you know, kids can search that out, they're not going to be forced to absorb it, so there's no point of reference.
Yeah, and they're not going to
watch it. I've watched all of Gomer Pyle. Cole, I'm in your camp, the Nick at Night camp. I've seen the full run of so many 60s and 50s shows just because that's all that was on. So I know Gomer Pyle like the back of my hand. Yeah. I've seen Mayberry. I've seen Andy Griffith and Mayberry RFD. I've seen it all.
And so something that has to feed into that is that the people who made this, you know, that referential culture that we kind of grew up with or were forced to consume, you know, like they were referencing something from them. People who are making stuff now came up with the stuff that was making the reference. Right. Yeah. We're a couple of generations beyond where the primary, like, you know, so like a primary appreciation for the actual thing. And then all of a sudden, just there's this gray area where people who were appreciating stuff like from the early 90s on, like it just becomes quicksand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember going out after watching Animaniacs and watching Goodfellas and it being a really dark afternoon for me. that's not true.
There are no pigeons here at all.
Yeah, there are no pigeons. And what's this?
Where's the god pigeon? He's my favorite character.
What's up with this long, drawn-out sequences of finding corpses just set to the entire running time of the back half of Layla? Like, it's 3 straight minutes of corpses. So, yeah. Oh boy. Anyway, good night, everybody. Thank you, Bob, for bringing this upon us and for joining us.
Yeah, and thanks to everyone out there for tolerating my awful voice. I normally don't sound like this.
If you want to hear how he normally sounds, you can listen to him on Retronauts.
Indeed.
Yes, please do. Please go to retronauts.com. And we're also partners with US Gamer, where I work my day job. So go to usgamer.net and read my stuff. I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
And go to Something Awful and find the things that Bob has written. And he doesn't use his own byline on things oftentimes. So you have to kind of search it. Mm-hmm. But if it's anything like me, you will find something that you really like that's unusually high quality and then click on it on some random name. And then it'll just be a big list of Bob stuff.
Yeah.
So you should do that as well. Yep. That is recommended. I've talked to, I think on this show, like talked Sugar about that, the NES instruction manual article, which is one of my all time favorite pieces of humor writing on the internet. And it is so good.
Thank you so much. And when I go back to listen to old Duck Feed podcasts, I'll often see myself in the notes before I listen to it. Like, what?
Yeah. It's before
I'm not offended. I'm like tickled. Like, oh, I'm glad when people talk about my work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been fans for a long time.
Yeah, it is, and it is serendipitous that we have become friends as well. So thank you, God. So thank you, Lord Jesus.
Thank God to the man upstairs. You're
welcome, my children.
Yo. I just kissed my fingers and put them towards the ceiling, in case anyone was wondering.
I knew exactly what you were doing.
Yo. Anyway, good night, everybody.
Next time we're doing Air Fortress.
Everybody.
Oh, Air Fortress. Yeah, Air Fortress next. Yeah. From the makers of Pokemon.
Good night.
Or Kirby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.